Okay, good afternoon. Now we are going to present the topic of impulse response measurement in rooms. And as nowadays this kind of measurement are performed digitally on digital sound, the first thing we have to do is to explain you how the sound can be digitized, transformed in a long sequence of number called samples, and what are the limitations of this technology, digital sound, and how this can be used for our measurement task. So today we are dealing with the sampling process applied to sound with convolution, which is a typical way of making digital filterings of a digital sound, how to perform convolution very efficiently by means of the fast Fourier transform FFT, and this way we get what is called fast convolution, and we will see that this is very important for impulse response measurement. Now, the first thing to do is to introduce the concept of sampling. Sampling is the action of measuring the value of a physical quantity repeatedly in time at a very fast rate, and particularly in case of audio sampling, we are employing a constant sampling rate. So we define a sampling frequency, FS, which is defined as the number of samples captured per second, is the number of numbers, because every sample is just a number expressing, for example, the value of a voltage. The number which is obtained by sampling has a limited precision, a finite precision, because it is an integer number with sign, positive or negative number, but this number is represented by a digital word with a limited number of bits, and you know the bit or binary digit is the number of bits give you the precision of a digital number inside a computer. And typically for audio sampling, we sample the sound with analog to digital converter circuits, which are capable of a resolution ranging between 16 and 24 bits. Of consequence, we are doing a double approximation. We are discretizing the waveform both along the time axis and along the vertical amplitude axis. If we plot our analog waveform on a grid, the sample values, the value of the sample amplitudes need to lie in the knot of a lattice, because they are discrete both in time and in amplitude. Let me look at this picture. The blue line is the waveform, and in case of audio and of acoustic, usually the voltage on the vertical axis is proportional to sound pressure. The central line here means zero sound pressure, that is the atmospheric pressure actually. So values which are above this line are positive pressure value, and they translate to positive voltage and positive number after sampling, and the values which lie below the horizontal central line mean negative acoustical pressure, that is pressure which is below the average atmospheric pressure, and after sampling these will result in negative numbers. When you sample this analog waveform, the digital conversion unit choose a point which is at every sampling interval, at every sampling instant, when the digital clock tell the system to read the value, then the system reads a numerical value which is as close as possible to the blue line, but it must stay over the grid, because also the amplitude of the signal has to be discretized. We are using integer number with finite amplitude accuracy, so it cannot give you the value here at the analog, the true analog value. It must give you a value which is discretized also in amplitude and not only in time. So definitely, if we look at the red curve, it doesn't look the same as the blue one. There is a sampling error. The digital waveform is different from the analog waveform. So this error is not nice. And also, if we listen to the sound, generally speaking, the red curve doesn't sound the same as the blue curve, and people perceive it as a distortion, and they say, oh, the sound is not nice. So this triggered the problem of fidelity of digital audio. Can a digitally sampled waveform represent faithfully the original analog one? Well, if we look back at this picture, the answer definitely is no. The digital waveform is never the same as the analog one. There is a significant sampling error due to this double discretization, both in time, discrete in time, and discrete in amplitude. But the answer becomes yes if we comply with the Shannon theorem. What is the wording of the Shannon theorem? The Shannon theorem says that the sampling frequency must be high enough so that the sampling frequency is at least double of the largest frequency in the signal being sampled. In audio, of course, as we are dealing with a wide band, a bandwidth of the signal which is up to 20 kHz, the Shannon theorem mandates that we employ a sampling frequency which is at least twice the 20 kHz bandwidth which we need to capture. So we need to sample the sound with at least 40 kHz sampling rate. What we do usually for avoiding the aliasing effect, we call aliasing the artifacts which occurs if we violate the Shannon theorem. If we don't comply with the Shannon theorem and we employ a sampling frequency which is not large enough in comparison with the frequency of the signal being fed to the analog to digital converter, then we get this nasty artifact called aliasing, which disrupt completely the waveform. It is not just a small disrupting as the one shown here. The waveform is completely messed up and you hear things which are not in the original signal. So we must avoid completely this aliasing artifact. For avoiding this, we employ what is called an anti-aliasing filter. An anti-aliasing filter is actually a low-pass filter which cuts everything above a certain frequency. Let me try to chart the frequency response of an anti-aliasing filter, making a chart in which we have the gain of the filter versus the frequency. So here we have the gain in decibel, and here we have frequency in hertz, and an anti-aliasing filter is usually substantially flat up to a certain corner frequency, and then it attenuates very quickly the sound above this corner frequency, and this frequency here must be, in case of audio, it must be 20 kHz, because we are dealing with sound which goes up to 20 kHz being audible. So this is the 20K limit, and above 20K the sampling, the anti-aliasing filter is reducing the gain, so that when we go up to the Nyquist frequency, which is the frequency which is half of the sampling rate, let me assume that here where I am making this larger red marker, this is the Nyquist frequency. At the Nyquist frequency, the signal must be substantially zero, no signal, so that we are respecting the Shannon theorem. So if the filter starts at 20 kHz, we cannot employ a sampling frequency of exactly 40 kHz, because we need some room, some bandwidth for the filter to attenuate the signal by, say, 80 decibels. So let me look at the most common cases and how the anti-aliasing filter works in these cases. The initial case is the CD audio. This is the most employed audio, digital audio standard even today, because a lot of music has been recorded with this standard. And this CD audio standard mandates for a sampling rate of 44.1 kHz, so the Nyquist frequency is half of the sampling frequency and is 22 kHz. The anti-aliasing filters has to do an attenuation of at least 80 decibels in just 2 kHz, because it has to go from 20 to 22, and in just 2 kHz it has to attenuate a lot of decibels, 80 decibels, for covering the 16-bit dynamic range of the CD audio. Hence the filter is very steep. It is a filter with a lot of slope. It's flat up to 20 kHz, and then in just 2 kHz it attenuates 80 decibels. So the slope of this filter is very large, and this is not nice for sound. Such a strong filter is causing a lot of artifacts in time domain, ringing, smoothing, and the signal lose his rapidity in following transient, and those artifacts are audible. So people was not happy when the CD audio entered the market. The first generation of analog to digital converter was equipped with quite bad anti-aliasing filter, which did cause a lot of artifacts, and of consequence the sound quality of the CD audio was not good. In the years this technology has been improved, some tricks are played nowadays, like employing a larger sampling frequency and then decimate after the analog to digital conversion has been performed, and nowadays the situation is not as bad. But nevertheless, this is a physical fact. This filter, being analog or digital, is the same, has to do a very hard job attenuating a lot of decibel in a very small frequency range. So, some years after, later than the CD audio was introduced, the DAT recorder was introduced. Probably you have never seen in your life a DAT recorder. A DAT recorder is a nice machine employing magnetic tape cassettes, 4mm cassettes, very similar to the cassettes employed in DV cameras, mini DV cameras for the sake of precision. And these small cassettes were able to store with a very high density the digital waveform, and the digital waveform is sampled at 48 kHz, so the sampling frequency is not really much larger than the CD audio. It is just 48 kHz, and the discretization is still at 16 bits. One could say that this is not a big improvement in quality because the sampling frequency has just increased by 10%, more or less. So you would expect an improvement of the sound quality of 10%. Instead, the sound quality of that recorder is substantially the double of the sound quality of the CD audio. Why? You improve by a factor of 2 with only a 10% increment of the sampling frequency. Because now the anti-aliasing filter has still to start at 20 kHz. But instead of sloping down 80 dB in 2 kHz, now it takes 4 kHz room for getting the same attenuation. You see, the slope is half. If the slope of the filter is half, the quality is double, because you have much less artifact due to the more gentle slope of the filter. Okay? This has been extended further, and now we have the best quality with the DVD audio standard employing a sampling frequency of 96 kHz. So we now doubled the frequency, the sampling frequency, in comparison with the DAT recorder. And the discretization too has been improved. Now it is 24 bit. This makes sense, because if we come back to this picture, if you reduce a lot the dimension of the horizontal discretization, employing smaller and smaller time segment, then you should also employ narrower discretization in amplitude. So really you get many more steps, both in time and in amplitude, and you get a waveform which can be much closer to the original one. So the DVD audio now provides you with this improved resolution both in time and in amplitude. And now the anti-aliasing filter is a much easier task, because you are not going up to 48, which is the current Nyquist frequency when you sample at 96 kHz. You can still start your filter around 20 kHz, just above 24, but that is not a significant difference. What happens is that now you have a lot of room for increasing, for attenuating the sound. From 24 kHz to 48 kHz, you have a 24 kHz bandwidth available. And such a very wide frequency range allow for a very gentle filter which causes substantially no artifact at all. So with the DVD audio the quality is exceptionally good, I would say it's absolutely perfect. It's not possible anymore to distinguish between the digital waveform and the analog one, they become the same. And the quality now is so good that there is no reason, no meaning in getting even higher frequency or higher number of bits. We already reached the optimal values for avoiding any quantization error, any digital sampling error with this standard. And now let's go to our beloved impulse response. We need to provide you with a formal definition of what is an impulse response. The definition is very simple. We have a system under test, which can be any kind of system, not only an electroacoustical system, it can be an optical system, it can be a radio system, it can be a magnetic system, it can be a vibrational system. So The concept of impulse response is general to the whole science. You have a system under test, you apply a stimulus to this system, and you look at the response of the system. This is called a single input, single output system. And the stimulus which you apply to your system is special, is not a generic waveform. It's called the unit pulse delta. It is also called the Dirac delta. Dirac is the name of the French scientist who invented this kind of signal, and so it took name from him and is now called the Dirac delta. And when you play a pulse like this through your system, by definition, the response of the system is called the impulse response. And the meaning of this wording is very explicit. Is the response of the system stimulated, excited with a unit pulse. When you are dealing with digital sampled waveform, what is a Dirac delta waveform? Is a long sequence of zero, 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 zero. They are all zeros except one sample, which is one. So the sequence is 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, a number of 0, 1, and again 0, 0, 0, 0, and so on. This is a digital Dirac delta function. Okay, very simple to create this test signal. You play this through your system, and you get the response of the system, you sample the response of the system, and this is the impulse response. And this instead is a sequence of numbers which are not generally zeros. There are some zeros here before the signal arrives, then you get numbers which are positive and negative, and this picture show you the real acoustical impulse response of a room like the one in which we are now. Well, in practice, in digital domain, a unit pulse signal is very easy to generate. In the real world, it's not so easy, but we can approximate this pulse signal with a pulsive source. And the traditional pulsive source employed in acoustic are pistols, like the one which is now in the room and you are passing it through the room, or it is like balloons, like this one, or other kind of explosive, like firecrackers. We will see the firecrackers, how they behave. And you can also use loudspeaker, and here you see a dodecahedron loudspeaker for creating an omnidirectional sound source. So let's look more in detail to an electroacoustical system, and in an electroacoustical system you have your source of signal, which is digital. In this case it's a CD player, but can also be a computer with this sound card, is the same. You have a digital sound becoming analog through the sound card, which is a digital to analog converter. Then you have an amplifier providing power, providing watts, and the powered signal is fed to a loudspeaker which radiates it in the room. The sound propagates in the room with waveforms and they reach the microphone directly or after reflection, and the microphone captures the sound, and the captured sound is sent to a computer or an analyzer for displaying the impulse response, which as seen as more or less this shape. Okay. So this is a typical electroacoustical system, and the system starts here and ends here. So for the computer, this is a completely electrical system. You have a signal, an electrical signal, entering your electroacoustical system, and you get another electrical system signal from the microphone. So your system is a black box, as shown here, and you enter an input signal in this black box, and that is usually called X, the input signal, it passes through the system, and the system is characterized by its own impulse response, which is called H, and the output of this process is the signal being sampled by the microphone, and we call this output signal Y. And now we can listen to how the things happen just by clicking by clicking here we listen the test signal, here we listen the impulse response. Okay, let me listen to the test signal, which is the signal which is stored on the CD, the dry signal. Okay, the signal was very dry here, the original one. It reverberates inside the room, characterized by his own impulse response. And this is the result of the filtering applied by the room, by the system, to the signal. Because the room is a filter which modifies the sound. Okay.